Welcome into the Fan pregame here on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Ailish and Justin here for the next hour and a half, up on TV here for the next hour with a little 30-minute radio segment as we get you set for Toronto and Texas. It's 8 p.m. start. The Blue Jays on the road, wrap up that series. So we'll have an extra 30 minutes to get you through that here on the radio version. But over the next hour on television, we'll have Sarah Sivian join us. Talk about tonight's Game 5, clinching moments possibly for the Florida Panthers against Carolina Hurricanes. That's an 8 p.m. puck drop. And then we'll shift over to a little Steve Ashburner pregame for Minnesota OKC, also a clinching opportunity at Game 5, 8:30 p.m. on Sportsnet 360. So lots to talk about on the network.
Yeah, a lot of clinching scenarios. It's clinching night on Sportsnet, potentially, between the Florida Panthers and Oklahoma City Thunder.
Over, under 1.5 clinches.
Over.
Yeah, I think it's double clinch.
I mean, we'll get to the lines a little later in the show, maybe just before 7, but I can't believe that the Panthers and Hurricanes are a near coin flip tonight.
Yeah,
like it feels very set up for the Florida Panthers to just dust their hands and move on to the Stanley Cup.
Well, there's this rumor going around that if the Stanley Cup playoffs were to end tonight and or tomorrow, like this round.
Conference finals, yes.
Yes, that the final Stanley Cup final wouldn't start for another week plus, maybe Saturday of next week. So maybe they want to lose on purpose, Justin, so then they can play another game.
Well, there are some real conspiracy theories about Paul Maurice throwing that game four. I don't think they could do it again. I don't know if they did.
It's risky if you do it twice.
But like there was like absolute nonchalance from the Florida Panthers in game four. Almost like people have talked about how they've handled dispatching the Toronto Maple Leafs and how they did it in maybe a sick and twisted way with their compliments towards them. And of course, the blaming of the media or the fan base It feels like they're just twisting the knife on everyone and maybe just like giving them the one win, that being the Carolina Hurricanes, who were without a win since 2006.
Like, they got them 15
straight losses in the conference finals. Like, no, you could actually have that. And then we're going to absolutely rip your soul out tonight. I feel like that's what's going to happen. And that the Panthers are playing, you know, 3D chess as opposed to checkers.
They're pretty smart. They've been there before and they've won. But it would be a long wait if you had to wait till Saturday night next weekend to play in a Stanley Cup final game. So maybe some chess and checkers being played. Anyway, we'll see how that shakes up tonight. We'll do some best bets later in the show. But I think we're both betting on some clinches happening tonight. Lead story of the day, though, unfortunately for Oilers fans and Zach Hyman fans in general, is that he's out for the rest of the postseason after what we believe is wrist surgery. It's really tough because he's not heart and soul, but he's close to it of that team. Last two playoffs in general, 21 goals in 40 games. Obviously, we know he's leading the postseason in hits. I think I've seen that stat 100 times. 111 hits.
Yeah, just as many hits.
Yeah, have you seen the stab more or has he hit more? It's pretty close. Doing both, you know, offensive, defensive work. So without Zach Hyman, Oilers fans, I still think they should feel very confident, but it's a big hole to fill with Zach Hyman not being in the lineup.
More references to Hyman hits or Cousins, SGA, and Nikhil Alexander-Walker?
I think it's Hyman hits.
It's pretty close, but it's probably Hyman hits at this point, just given that he's been doing it for three rounds now. This is a major, major blow to Hyman, to the Oilers. It's shaping up to be a rematch, right? Like maybe Carolina can pull it off. Maybe Dallas can, you know, build off the Zach Hyman injury and potentially get there. But it truly, and it was this before, like it's going to have to be Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, perhaps the two best playoff performers in the league and the two very best players in the league right now, just overcoming the Florida Panthers. Like it was always going to be partly that. But without Hyman, and with Brown banged up, Evander Kane banged up, like you're seeing the depth of this team, which has shone so brightly in these playoffs, diminished here. And it feels like it'll truly have to be, if and when we get there, just Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl just overcoming what might be the best team in the NHL over the last three seasons combined. So it is setting up, I think, really well for the Florida Panthers. And it is setting up for the potential story of just a superhuman force or superhuman duo that is McDavid and Draisaitl just overcoming something they probably shouldn't, but I'm not doubting that they can.
Yeah, their depth has been one of the bright stars of, I guess, this last couple series, as it hasn't just been McDavid and Draisaitl. It has been Hyman and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Corey Perry, who's aging backwards, and Evander Kane, who came in after missing an entire season and looks fresh. So maybe he can elevate. Like, he's going to elevate and use some of that. But maybe this is Jeff Skinner's music, you know?
I mean, it might be. It might have to be.
Well, I think he might get in the lineup. I felt terrible when he got that first playoff game, and then it was like, see you never. I mean, this guy's been waiting his whole life for this. Maybe he gets in and he makes a big moment happen.
Serious indictment now on Jeff Skinner and that decision to sign Jeff Skinner, given that you got to go really far down the injury list for him to potentially get in, and maybe they go with 11-7, go with seven defensemen, and with Matthias Ekholm likely to come back sooner than later. But, like, looking at the lines, like, they do still have certainly competency in the top six. Right now, Nugent Hopkins, McDavid, Corey Perry, how they ended that game, Vasily Podkolzin and Leon Draisaitl and Victor Arvidsson. They have not felt playing Victor Arvidsson. And Vasily Podkolzin's been good, but there's some limitations on what he can provide. I think you still have enough in that top six to be good, but we know the Florida Panthers, and again, don't want to go too far down this road because we're not there, but they have three brilliant forward lines. So where else are you going to win matchups? And right now, Evander Kane, Adam Henrique, and Kasperi Kapanen is the third line, and then you don't even have the full fourth line because you might go with Troy Stetcher and Matthias Ekholm playing on the back end. So it just feels like a lot of patchwork, a lot of, hey, we're going to have to play McDavid and Draisaitl a little bit more and on different units to just make up for the fact that you're going to be down some forwards here. But if Evander Kane is not right and other members of this forward group aren't right, like, they're going to be seriously shorthanded against, again, don't want to go too far down the road, the deepest team that we've seen in the playoffs, and a team that seems to be even better than it was last year on its path to the Stanley Cup. So I'm a little worried about the Oilers, despite, like, 48 hours ago thinking, oh, this is, it's Edmonton's time. It's gonna happen this year.
Yeah, and the Panthers are kind of just in the same situation that the Oilers were in before Zach Hyman got hurt. Like, we were struggling to pick a Conn Smythe winner for the Panthers. Everybody is kind of sharing the workload in terms of point production. They're all equally distributed, except Sam Bennett, who we're going to push for to maybe win the Conn Smythe if he gets there. But in terms of goals, like, it's not like one guy's running away with it. So they were almost going to go equally matched into this postseason, or into the Stanley Cup final, if they do, in fact, meet, which we think they might. But now it's just, it's Leon and it's Connor in their moment, if they make it there, to really establish that this is different this time around. And I don't think I trust two people more than those two to do it. Like, I have seen that video of lock in with Connor McDavid 100 times, more than I've seen the Zach Hyman hits stat. I've watched it. I've felt that disappointment that I'm sure they felt all postseason when they went home and they thought about losing in game seven, and then they got back on the horse and they trained all offseason, and then they came in and they started a whole new season and they just thought about how close they were. Now it's like, this is for you to go and redeem what happened to you last year. And I don't think there's two more people that would be able to weather that storm more than those two. So it kind of works out in a sense, like the storyline coming together here.
As much as I am worried about the forward group and the all that will fall on those two, again, if and when we get there,
I think it's fair to say maybe we're going to get there.
The blue line and the goaltender right now for the Oilers has been very, very impressive. Like, I thought this, we both picked the Kings, right? You picked the Kings? I picked the Kings.
I forget now.
I think you were on the Kings. Anyway, on the Kings early because, you know, how is Evan Bouchard going to handle the loss of Matthias Ekholm? Yes. And Evan Bouchard has been brilliant in these playoffs since about game three when everything turned for the Oilers. Brett Kulak, Darnell Nurse, Jake Walman, John Klingberg, like, all of them have played extraordinarily well. And Stuart Skinner may only be brilliant against the Dallas Stars and be just okay against everybody else, but right now he's been probably the best goaltender in this round. He's been so, so good against the Dallas Stars. He's been playing out of his mind the last couple games. So if that continues, then there's a better chance perhaps, or you're better equipped at least in that realm than you were last year, given how well everyone's played and how you diagnosed the problem and brought in two puck movers and Jake Walman and John Klingberg to sort of fix those issues back there. But again, I just go back to the depth, the third line that we saw from Florida with Marchand and Lundell and Luce Terrain, and how they just wreak havoc on all these opponents, and how we still haven't even got the best from Matthew Tkachuk, and it feels like there's more from Sam Reinhart as well. Like, they are so well set up, and that extra little bit of rest that they could potentially earn with a win tonight before the Stanley Cup final, like, it's going to benefit them. It's not going to mean anything for Zach Hyman, who you mentioned is not going to be able to play with a surgically repaired wrist. So it's a serious, serious blow and not something, despite some minor injuries, that the Panthers are dealing with. Like, they look unbelievably healthy going into the final stages of these playoffs.
Yeah, and the chance to send it to the Stanley Cup final tonight against Carolina, that's game five. We've got that on Sportsnet with a puck drop around 8 p.m. pregame show at 7:30 on Sportsnet. And to help us tee that game up and look around the rest of the NHL is our friend Sarah Sivian from Stiff Report, Substack, and more. Sarah, appreciate you coming on. It's been a while. How's it going?
Oh, I'm fantastic. How are you guys?
We're good. We're just hoping that this idea that maybe the Stanley Cup final doesn't start for another week plus is fraudulent and that they don't have to make us do a whole week without hockey.
No, they want late June hockey. Like, they're hell-bent on the late June hockey.
I don't want that.
You guys remember last year it was like one day before the draft and everyone's like running from, where was it, Edmonton to to Vegas. Yeah, that was fun.
It was, and there was never a plane that went properly to the destination that they wanted. We heard a lot about that. So maybe like a happy medium where they get some time to prepare for the draft and then also go to a Stanley Cup final. Okay, so let's talk about tonight. You know, you're kind of Canes adjacent. I like to put you in like my Canes adjacent world. You've got a foot in the Canes camp. So I want to ask you, you know, they finally won Eastern Conference final game since 2006. Is that enough to like let the positive vibes come back? Okay, we believe in ourselves, or am I like romanticizing that just a little bit?
It would have been enough precisely 2 games ago. It's not enough, as every single team, as your beloved Leafs over here have seen in the previous rounds, it's not enough to come back. Like, they have been so unbelievably good. And you know that you knew going into it because they were just, they got better and they're the defending champs. So it's like that simple.
Is there a reckoning? I mean, there's a reckoning of sorts happening, I guess, in Toronto while we wait for Brad Treliving to wrap up graduation duties over the weekend for his daughter, rightfully so. I say that slightly tongue-in-cheek. But, like, what happens here, you know, 0-15, and again, they can't do anything about what happened, you know, in 06 or since 06 with this current group. But, you know, if the results were in Carolina happening in Toronto or another Canadian market or a major U.S. market, like, there would be a lot of noise about certain parties. And there is noise certainly starting to emanate out of Carolina and those who talk about the Hurricanes. But, like, what happens if they crash out in 5 here? What happens if they just hit their head on the ceiling once more? Does anything happen, or is this a true trust the process scenario? And, you know, dealing with the fact that, hey, they made a big splash, it didn't work, Rantanen had to go, and you move on to that next project.
Did it not work, though? Because Logan Stankoven has 5 goals this series. How many does Rantanen have right now on the
Good
series?
Point. I have Stankoven's to say. Stankoven's been great.
That's true.
But I get your point. And I do. I think when you looked at this roster in the beginning of the regular season, nobody thought this roster was going to win the cup. You know what I mean? So now you kind of have to mitigate what you thought with Rantanen. Maybe, oh, they're going all in. This team is good again. And then they beat the Devils that were broken. They beat the Caps that were kind of inflated and overrated. So I kind of think, oh, I don't know if it's a cope, but I think this is where we're at, right? They at least won one ECF game. I think Anderson, they just re-signed him, and I was kind of criticizing him. But look at this playoff run he's had. He's been fantastic. He's the reason why they've even won one game. So they're running him back one more year. I think, obviously, Jarvis and Stankoven have been like a really good window into the future. I think maybe, I don't know. I know the hot takes would be, are they going to come get Mitch Marner? They might try. Now they've shown us they can do anything, or they'll try to do everything. But what should they do? I think they need more goal scoring.
You know the Hurricanes really well. If Mitch Marner landed in Carolina, again, a hypothetical, would that be like knowing what you know about the Canes, knowing what you know about, you know, I guess Mitch Marner's plight and his maybe want to leave a market like Toronto? Do you think that would be a great fit for Marner?
Absolutely. And I've talked to a lot of former Maple Leafs that came through the Canes, and they just said, yeah, it's great to have the pressure off a little bit. You find your game. Obviously, somebody like Mitch Marner, you want to win from your hometown. You want to win after all of this time. And it absolutely stinks that you didn't, right? But now it might be time to move on and go somewhere where you can kind of refine the love of the game. I know you remember the beginning of his tenure with the Leafs. It didn't start off too hot, too happy. He had to kind of paint smiley faces or whatever he was doing on his gloves to be happy. So you just kind of want to see this guy explode and be happy. And you're seeing a great regular season player who cannot connect in the postseason. And you're wondering why. It might be as simple as the pressure he puts on himself, the pressure maybe his family puts on him, the pressure the city puts on him, which they should, right? You want this guy, everybody wants him to succeed, but you might want to take a step back and go somewhere a little bit quieter.
I thought it was so interesting today. We were like getting ready for our best bet segment, and I looked and they already have the odds for next year's Stanley Cup favorite, and it's Carolina Hurricanes. And I'm like, oh my God, not again. Like, I'm not going to buy into
this.
She
was angry.
But I just, because first of all, they're about to lose the Florida Panthers again. And then I also thought, well, is this maybe projecting? You say this is the into the future. Okay, Stankoven, Jarvis, maybe Mitch Marner. Like, is this next year their cup champs? Like the or cup favorites like they are, or is this next year they're cup favorites if they get XYZ? Like, why would they already be the cup favorites? I can't believe it.
I think the odds makers love the Hurricanes because they play such a predictable game, right? Where it's like they take so many shots. They have a really good on the penalty kill. But how many times can you win? You can win a million out of a million one times. But when the a million and one time is the Florida Panthers, you're going to lose. So it's kind of that's the issue that they keep running into where it's like they play so well against everyone except like the top two most elite teams in the league. So what do you do? Do you change your entire system? I don't know. This is the existential question right now, but it's why the odds makers love them.
They're not getting my money.
No.
Yeah, not this time.
No.
Assuming you think Rod Brind'Amour is above replacement level, which I know you do, what happens in a hypothetical world where Rod Brind'Amour is just replaced by someone who is a coach that is replacement level? Like, what happens to the Hurricanes in that scenario?
Oof, I think they're really exposed for what they are, which is kind of he optimizes the roster and guys love playing for him. They don't really have a choice and they understand. It's like somebody like Taylor Hall, who signed an extension, said he loves that Rod kind of forces you to buy in. And the system is everybody has a chance because there aren't many of those elite players that it kind of force everybody out of having that chance, if that makes sense. It's a system at heart, and somebody like Rod is perfect to run that like penalty kill ship. And it has its faults where it's like a star doesn't necessarily fit in that well into that system. Like, he had Gensel maybe playing fewer minutes than he should have last season. You had Rantanen unhappy with the prospect of staying there, and it's just it kind of is what it is. But if somebody with the current roster takes over that isn't Rod, I think you see it exposed and you appreciate him a little bit more. But I do understand the angst there when it comes to, all right, what can we change when the same thing's happening year after year?
I want to talk a little bit about the Florida Panthers because, you know, I think that they get overlooked a little bit in this discussion. Like, I don't think the Canes have played well, but I think the Florida Panthers are a really good hockey team. We just saw them obviously run through Toronto as well. What surprised you about them? Is it, you know, how great Brad Marchand has fit Jones at the back end, maybe some of this depth scoring, Bobrovsky not being elite, but still finding a way to win these games. Like, it just feels like every day they come out, they're hungrier and they're a better team. And they're probably going to go back to the Stanley Cup final and maybe have a rematch here.
For me, it's like no sign of cup hangover whatsoever. Even after that brutal game 7 against the Leafs, they just come in and they just, it's systematic. Like, they just absolutely detonate. They figure out what the team's weakness is and they absolutely just pounce on it no matter what. You saw it with the Light. They've had really tough opponents, and it's the same situation kind of for the Leafs and for the Hurricanes, where it's like they're trying to get past this one hump and it's the hardest possible opponent stepping in their way. Do they have to beat the best to be the best? Of course, but it's really hard when it's the Florida Panthers.
We're talking to Sarah Sivian of the Civ Report on Substack. It's looking like the rematch, as Ailish mentioned, Edmonton and Florida, assuming these two teams with 3-1 series leads do in fact advance. Do you give, and I went to game 7, but the series was wonky, right? I mean, 3-0 Florida, Edmonton climbs its way back in, and it was an unbelievable finish to the series, but it felt like it didn't ever even settle into the competition, at least we were expecting. But, you know, there's a big blow here with Zach Hyman going to be out for the Oilers. It feels like they're going to get through, but their depth will be at least diminished going into a Stanley Cup final against the Florida Panthers team that, as you mentioned, like they've found a way to not only get back likely, but get back extraordinarily healthy, at least to this point. How do you size up a potential rematch with, you know, Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid again being at the top of their game, but running into something that is so much deeper than two lines, a brilliant goaltender, and a great defense core?
I know. It's just going to be even a more elite version of what we saw last year with all the drama. I am terrified of the Oilers, just kind of watching them. They're doing what the Panthers are doing in kind of an easier way. And I feel like, I don't know if that's completely accurate, but I feel like they're a little more whimsical. And I just think McDavid hasn't even reached the level. And he, what does he have? He's leading playoffs with 24 points in 15 games. He could score more goals. I know he's saving them for the finals. That's how I feel. And I feel like Stuart Skinner, he's scaring me. And I don't know if I mean that in a positive or a negative way. I don't think any of us know night after night. Evan Bouchard, he is elevating his game to a way I haven't seen yet before from him. He's like an X factor. If Ekholm comes back, their defense is suddenly elite. And I think this just, it's going to be the biggest test of if the Panthers can be a dynasty or not. It's going to be the best of the best.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing like a motivated, angry, pissed off Edmonton team with Draisaitl and McDavid, who've seen that clip that we just referenced before we brought you on, the dig in and like everything just coming back full circle a year later, and how much hungrier you would be after sitting around with that devastation all season long. I think it'll unlock something scary. Whether I'm excited about the scariness or not, I'm in the same boat. We always talk about Conn Smythe on our show, and I think it's been difficult for the Panthers' perspective. I wonder if you had to hand a Conn Smythe to a Panther. I think I got your answer maybe for an Oiler if it was Connor McDavid. If not, correct me. Who's been like the best Florida Panther that would maybe deserve that honor?
It's funny because I just wrote about this today, and I know this might be a hot take, but I'm going Sam Bennett. I just think he's always there breaking through, whether it's like, so I know it's controversial with the hits and all the nonsense he does, but isn't that the Panthers' identity? It's kind of playing on that edge and finding the absolute nonsense that you can do and doing it. And he is able to transcend in a way of getting in front of the net. We're so many players that can do that elitely, if that's a word, during the regular season are failing to do against great opponents this postseason. He's been able to do it, and he's kind of in the trenches there. And I mean, he has 9 goals. I know he doesn't have the most points, but I think Barkov is so good because he is their consistent, old faithful, old reliable. But I think Sam Bennett is such an X factor that I kind of have him doing it unless we get insane playoff Bob.
I will be retweeting the Civ report, given that we are big fans.
I did read it. That's why I asked her that, because I knew she was going to say that, because we both bet.
We're setting it up.
We might have Sam Bennett stock.
Last one for you, and I'm putting you on the spot a little bit. What's like the key offseason storyline for you? What's the most interesting thing that will be settled this summer?
Like, not to make everything about the Leafs, but it's got to be Mitch Marner. I'd like to see some offer sheets after what happened with the Oilers and the Blues. Like, you saw how effective those players, Holloway and Broberg, were. And I think you just see I think the cap rising for the most since what the lockout is going to be a huge development, and just seeing what teams can and can't do. Because I think the playing field has been even now. Teams have caught up, like whether it's the Avalanche or the Canes, who have kind of maybe debatably an internal cap, seeing how they've caught up to a team like the Leafs, because now everybody can afford it. So let's see when it's kind of back into, okay, what are teams going to do that can afford spending to the cap again?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to like Sam Bennett making so much money and then people regretting it, or maybe not. Like, people are going to make a lot of money. And
people freaking out about the Bennett contract,
we'll
I think,
back.
Is number one.
Yeah, that's
me.
Definitely going to happen. Like, there's no doubt about it. They would be freaking out.
I really wonder who's going to get him. Maybe he'll take a hometown deal.
Yeah, come on up to Toronto.
That's hometown.
Yeah, that's this hometown.
Him re-signing in Florida is the only thing that will not have people going crazy.
No, it'll make sense. All right, Sarah. Well, this was really fun to have you on. We appreciate it. And maybe there's hockey past tonight, or maybe a week and a half until hockey. Either way, we'll be ready to read your report on the Civ Report Substack. So thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me, guys.
We'll see you soon. That's Sarah Sivian. Civ Report Substack, also part of a Too Many Men podcast as well, and helping us get set for tonight's Game 5, Florida Carolina, 8 p.m. puck drop. We've got a pregame show, obviously, on Sportsnet Hockey Central around 7:30.
So you led the witness there on Sam Bennett?
Well, I did my research, and I read our guest's work, and I saw that she had spoken about Sam Bennett. So I just was curious if she was still feeling that way 3 hours after writing it. She was.
We talk, all kidding aside with Sam Bennett, we talk a lot about, you know, the legacy thing for Connor McDavid. And I know, like, there's like a dynasty thing potentially here for Florida. Mm-hmm. But if they get their two cups by beating the greatest player the sport has ever had, and the superstar running mate in Leon Draisaitl, who would be a number one on, 30 teams in the NHL, or pretty close to. Like, it's pretty remarkable that that's the setup potentially twice in a row for Florida, and would show you and quite clearly illustrate just how brilliant they are to get through three rounds and then have to beat the greatest player in the game twice. Mm-hmm. Again, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, but it'd be quite the story to tell.
We said asterisks at the beginning. We can still talk about it. And if it comes back and it's not going to be Edmonton and Florida in the final, then we'll be excited to have a different storyline. I don't see it happening. I think if you had to pick one team to come back, would be Dallas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably.
Okay, so let's see it.
Definitely. Not probably. Definitely.
Definitely Dallas over Carolina. Whatever. Blue Jays tonight?
Yeah, Blue Jays and Rangers. They'll wrap up their three-game set. It'll be Tyler Mahle versus our guy Paxton Schultz.
Our guy? When did he become our guy?
Well, we need to, claim some individuals.
All right, Paxton Schultz, baby.
Mally's had great numbers this season, though. Sub-2 ERA and 11 starts, which is not maybe pretending great things for the Blue Jays, who were shut out on four hits last night in Game 2, wasting a solid Bowden Francis effort. Mm-hmm. No Bo Bichette today, which will mean Dalton Varsho.
Eyeball emojis.
You're really raising the eyebrow.
Well, we came in here after Blair and Barker, and I was like, what's going on with Bo Bichette? And they didn't know. And I was like, what's happening? And they're like, might be hurt. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Blair doesn't have the greatest poker face, but he
didn't look like...
He didn't look like it was much.
Oh, okay. I read it differently.
Did you read it?
I sit in his chair, and I felt the energy was off. Just something was off.
Something's different about
the chair.
Okay.
Well, we had a Hall of Famer in here. Shout out to Kevin Barker, his alma mater. Anyway, but yeah, no Bo Bichette, rare day off. He doesn't take days off.
You're 10 years away from your Dartmouth.
Oh my God, that would literally be the biggest honor of my life. It's never going to happen. Also, no Kirk. So Varsho is hitting leadoff, and Santander is our two spot tonight.
Yeah, that's...
And once again, I haven't dropped
that's a lineup.
Anthony Santander from my fantasy team.
Maybe you need to do that just for
honestly,
the sake of the
it's
city.
Been... I look at it every day, and I go to drop him. I'm like, you know what? The second I drop him, you and Holly, who are running one team, two people, are going to scoop him up, and he's going to go on
my hands clean of
a hot streak. So I haven't dropped him yet, but I think he deserves it. Seriously.
We'll ask Holly in the break if he'd pick him up.
What if we did a little trade? Is there someone that's underperforming on your team as badly as Santander? I don't think that's even possible.
I have no idea. Dust my hands clean of it.
All right, well,
Shohei Ohtani, though.
I'll trade for him.
Versus 20.
We've got Toronto and Texas tonight. Sportsnet 1, that's an 8 p.m., just after 8 p.m. first pitch. So that'll be up on Sportsnet 1 and up Sportsnet 590 Fan. We'll do a half an hour pregame before the pregame on the radio. We'll take a quick break, though. Steve Ashburner of NBA.com, senior writer there, will help us tee up Game 5, Euro-KC in Minnesota tonight with an 8:30 tip on Sportsnet 360. We'll come back. We'll talk some hoops.
Hey, it's Matt Marchese.
And I'm Mike Fiuta.
We're discussing the top stories of the day across the NHL and the hockey world, weekdays at noon.
It's the Fan Hockey Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fan Pregame here on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. As a reminder, in about 30 minutes, we'll take a break. We'll go back on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, get you set for Blue Jays, Rangers, which is a later start tonight, of course, as they are in Texas. So 7:30 pregame show on the network will go up until 7:30. We've got Florida, Carolina, Game 5. That's on Sportsnet with an 8 p.m. puck drop. And then Justin's OKC, Game 5, 8:30 on Sportsnet 360. The vibe's good, medium, bad.
Extraordinary. Extraordinary.
Let's
vibes.
Go.
I mean, I don't know how you can complain. It feels like, you know, they've been anointed a couple times already. Like, you win Game 7 against Denver, and you're like, oh, that's the NBA Finals. And they win Game 4, go up 3-1 on Minnesota, and everyone's like, okay, that's the NBA Finals. I'm sure there will be, like, another NBA Finals along the way, but only 5 more wins for my Thunder to be champions here. Very excited.
We'll see if our next guest has to pour any cold water on your hot takes that OKC's cruising to a championship. Steve Ashburner joins us, NBA.com. We appreciate you coming on. Steve, how's it going tonight?
Doing fine. Thanks for having me on.
We appreciate it. Now, Justin, my co-host here, big Thunder guy. He's feeling very confident about their ability to close out the T-Wolves tonight. Do you believe the same as Justin?
Well, sure I do. I mean, they're at home. They didn't play their best basketball early in the series, but I think that they did sort of find their game and, you know, their swagger, and remember the fact that they were the league's best team, the winningest team with 68 victories. I mean, Justin is kind of front running, isn't he?
He is a front runner, oh, no, Steve. I mean, just to try, welcome to the show, Steve.
You know, just a Canadian that loves Canadian excellence,
love,
and we're getting that with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And I've been kind of bothered for the last couple of weeks here, Steve, with all the SGA discourse and how people don't seem to appreciate his brand of basketball. Where do you stand on this conversation?
Well, I get why it annoys some people, and I don't particularly like it either when somebody's out there trying to, you know, trick the referees into fouls that aren't sort of a natural outgrowth of the competition. I understand the numbers, and it's been proven that, you know, he is not rewarded inordinately with, you know, a ridiculous number of free throws. And I guess it's to be applauded at a certain level that he is able to play effectively as a point guard, as a initiator of the offense for the Thunder, and he's able to sort of create contact or take advantage of defensive players' overzealousness or mistakes, or make his arm tie up look like they're doing. And you know, that's pretty crafty. You have to be so many levels. It's 3D chess. I mean, it's really impressive in terms of just his skills overall. Look, I would love to see as few free throws in a game as possible. So, you know, if that's something that's a real focus and a desired goal, then that guy's probably not going to be my favorite player. But, you know, I think it's gotten sort of overblown as well. So I like the fact that he works in the mid-range. I mean, I really enjoy that. I think that the game has gone too three-point heavy, and a lot of the style that distinguished the NBA before the mid-teens with the Golden State Warriors and Steph Curry. You know, I've always said the guys who make shots in the mid-range, I mean, those are the guys you emulated in your driveway or at the park. I mean, because they all had distinctive ways of shooting that shot. Dominique Wilkins, Bernard King, Sidney Moncrief, Dr. J, you know, you name it. I think most people shooting three-pointers kind of look the same. Maybe not Curry, but for the most part. And so it's not as individual a style, and I like that SGA, he's not shy. He doesn't worry about Mark Daigneault saying, you know, that's a low percentage long two or something. You know, enough of that verbiage. I just like guys who are confident and they can score from anywhere on the floor.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely has it all. Like, I understand a lot of people will be frustrated with some degree of flopping, but again, he's crafty enough to create those situations, but he's also taking shots, as you mentioned, from the mid-range and from three. His scoring package is, in my opinion, limitless. And that same can't be said, I guess, for Anthony Edwards, who's unbelievably talented, but in such a crucial game, stuck on two shots for the most of the first half, if not the entire first half. How much heat should be on Ant-Man for what happened in game four? Because it was, other than the top two guys, himself and Randall, an A-plus performance from the depth from Minnesota. But it felt like Ant-Man wasn't doing what SGA does, which is ensure that he's putting his stamp on the game.
Look, your two stars cannot get outscored by the other team's two stars by 53 points in a must-have kind of a game. You know, tell me when that's happened in NBA history and it's gone down okay with anybody involved, whether it's inside or outside the team. And for Anthony Edwards to sort of embrace this notion of, well, I played the right way. They went out of their way to make sure I didn't have shots. What does he think every superstar in the league has ever faced? You know, did Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, did they settle for, well, we'll score 53 points fewer than the opponents, top two guys, and we expect that the Bulls are still going to be able to win championships? Never happened. I mean, when I think of players from the past, One's a little more, I think, known for this. When LeBron James took heat early in his career, for in a playoff game that, that Cleveland lost, he had passed the ball to a guy named Danielle Marshall. And Danielle Marshall was left to hoist, you know, the potential game-winning shot late in the game. And you know, people wondered, well, LeBron, I mean, you're the man. Why wouldn't you take that shot? Well, I made the right basketball play and hit the open man, and he's getting paid to make shots as well. And, you know, that's fine if you're in a gym or if you're in the G League or whatever, but not at this level. And before that, I mean, I covered Kevin Garnett his entire run, the first 12 years in Minnesota. And he took a bunch of grief when in a playoff game situation. He had the ball down low, and he passed to a teammate named Dean Garrett to take the final 12-foot shot or whatever. And, of course, Garrett didn't make the shot. And sort of like, no, you know, you're the guy that has to do that. You have to figure out ways to do it. You might not like having to cope with double or triple teams, and there are ways to counter that stuff. You better learn that, because this isn't going to cut it. I look at this as a major learning opportunity for Anthony Edwards. You know, he's not yet 24 years old. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is one of those things where somebody has to pull him aside and say, okay, your heart might be in the right place, that, yes, it is good to find teammates when they're open, but you still have a responsibility. And if you have to do more work in a pick-and-roll situation, working behind screens, whatever it is, you're going to have to do that, because that's how you become not just the face of the league for commercials, but a guy who can lead your team to, you know, not one, but multiple championships. And I'm sure that's what his goal is, and that's what the goal for the Timberwolves, that's what they have in mind for Anthony Edwards.
Yeah, only five times this season did Anthony Edwards play more than 35 minutes and take less than 13 shots, and three of those times were against OKC, so they've got the blueprint to shut him down, and it clearly worked. I want to look a little bit ahead, not that this series is over, not that the other series is over, but they're both 3-1, so let's just project that possibly we see a Pacers and OKC final. How would the Pacers stack up against the other competition that OKC's had to face? Obviously, Pacers seem a little chippy, a little fun to play, not fun to play against, but would it be a challenge, or would this be a little bit of an easy final appearance for the OKC?
No, I would never term this an easy situation. Now, you can get into a situation where a team has the other team's number, and for some reason that everything goes downhill for one team, and you know, so it becomes a problem, and the series doesn't go the way you thought. But I think on paper, and from what we're seeing in the preliminary here, you know, this is a tremendous potential matchup with the best offensive team in the league against, you know, a high-powered offensive team. Both those teams are deep. Both of them are very ensemble-oriented. You know, they're not your, you know, now obviously SGA was the MVP of the league, but even he came about sort of organically within that team. I mean, I remember it wasn't that long ago, 2-3 years, where Oklahoma City, people talked about them and saying, well, you know, Sam Presti's going to have to use that war chest of draft picks to be able to bring in a centerpiece star, a guy who, you know, all these supporting players will fit around. Well, SGA emerged, you know, he came in sort of under the radar and from the Clippers, and he's emerged, and he's fast-tracked their development. And so, you know, in a way you could say a similar thing about Tyrese Halliburton. Now he's, you know, he's more at the all-star level than he is an MVP candidate, but I don't want to put a ceiling on him. And I think they're both, they get a lot out of their depth. I think they are full of players who, you know, the cliche now is stars in their roles. And, you know, I'm just impressed with how almost whichever guy comes on the court for both of these teams, he does what he's brought in to do. And, you know, to be able to sort of be on demand that way, when your coach calls and puts you into a situation or flips the rotation or whatever it is. And, you know, that to me is, you know, the ultimate compliment to a professional and a professional athlete. Also, by the way, I think Mark Bagnell and Rick Carlisle, that's a tremendous battle of coaches on the sidelines.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of similarities between these two teams. And you just mentioned one potential advantage. Like, I think a lot of advantages will lie with OKC. Like you mentioned it, they're both led by an elite scoring guard, but one of them is the MVP and one is, you know, all-star level, and they both have depth, which is includes pesky shooters and defenders. But, you know, the coaching edge, despite Dagno's brilliance, you know, might land with Rick Carlisle, who's been around and doing it for a little longer than Dagno has. Going back to, you know, what we've seen so far in the Eastern Conference Final, Pacers and Knicks, what's been the difference here for you? Has it been the brilliance and versatility of Indiana, or is there an unseriousness to the New York Knicks at this stage, which is definitely fed into the results so far?
Well, they're much more dependent on their two stars, the Jalen Brunson and the Karl-Anthony Towns. And Brunson has had a tough time. I mean, he scored some points, but he's also had stretches where last night in particular, I mean, he got most of his points in about a 7 or 10 minute stretch. And that's when Aaron Nesmith was not guarding him. Indiana happens to have several players that can guard him. Now, obviously, Nesmith has done the best. And the fact that he came back and played after what looked like it might be a problem of an ankle sprain in game three, he came back, he was there, and I think he made a big difference. He might be the MVP of this series to this point just because of how his impact has shown up at both ends. I think it's that. I think, you know, Carl, I've known Cat since he was a rookie and a really likable guy. I'm not sure he's always locked in. Sometimes he's the best player on the floor, you know, for 8, 10, even a full quarter, and then he seems to drift at other times. So, you know, it'd be nice to see him just sort of tear it up. I know he scored 60 points in an NBA game one time, and his team lost that game, which is kind of a comment on Karl-Anthony Towns. So I think it's that. I think that the group has been greater than New York Stars, just the way the Knicks need to play, physical and defensive oriented. The Pacers have sort of tilted the floor, and they're playing faster and more elusive than New York would prefer.
Future outlook for both these teams looks pretty good, especially in a weakened Eastern Conference. And with Jason Tatum shelved next year, it feels like Indiana and New York will be definitely part of the conversation at this time, perhaps next year. If you had to buy stock in a team, like which one do you think, like let's say they run, one of them runs into a brick wall here in the OKC Thunder in the NBA Finals with the opportunity to retool a little bit this summer, who do you think has a better chance of being a championship team in the years to follow with an Eastern Conference that feels wide open for both of them?
Well, I think Indiana, where they are in their timeline is a little more encouraging than that. And I also don't trust New York as a franchise sort of in that market from reactionary moves. You know, if they get eliminated tomorrow night, you know, who's to say they don't decide, well, we got to make a coaching change. Well, we need to do this, we need to do that, because of the tabloid headlines that get generated either pro or con regarding that team. I think that they're a little bit more, you know, whipsaw that way and react to outside influences. I think Indiana, you know, part of the beauty that OKC enjoys as well is you have a incredibly loyal fan base, and the people that run those franchises are able to work almost, you know, unbothered in their laboratories in terms of what they want to do with the team, and that there's not a lot of discouraging words thrown their way, and they're not having to react to, you know, too much to what, you know, the NFL team in town or the NHL team in town or, you know, whatever it is, the sports market and what the sports media in that town might be saying. I think they're kind of left alone and they do their thing, and I like the Pacers horizon for the next 2 or 3 years.
Well, looking forward to seeing which teams prevail to the NBA final, but it looks like we might have that Pacers OKC matchup, which would be really fun and exciting to see a new champ again for the seventh consecutive year of new champions. Mm-hmm. Steve, we appreciate your time tonight. Enjoy the game, enjoy the rest of the playoffs, and hopefully we get a chance to chat soon.
Yeah, we've only got, a maximum of about 13 games
That's
left?
That's it.
All these series go to the max. I mean, we're going to miss the NBA pretty soon in a matter of weeks, so enjoy every one you get.
Yeah, you as well. Thanks so much for coming on. Steve Ashburner, NBA.com, helping us tee up tonight's Game 5, Minnesota OKC, Sportsnet 360 at 8:30 p.m.
Yeah, I don't want to get ahead of my skis here, but it feels to me like the Pacers are Thunder light. So if we get that NBA Finals, like if you're a Thunder fan like myself, I think you're going to be feeling pretty good about yourself. Like you look, they're both, again, a scoring guard runs the team, SGA versus Haliburton. I know Halliburton's having his moment here, but who would you rather have? It would be Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Yes.
And then the next two options, J-Dub and Chet, have been awesome in this series against the T-Wolves, have proved their mettle, I think, on the playoff stage. And you would take them certainly over Pascal Siakam and the next best guy on Indiana, whether that's Miles Turner or Andrew Nembhard. Andrew Nembhard, another Canadian, of course, we're cheering for him as well. And then they got Nesmith and they got Dort, so these lockdown defenders in the starting lineup. And it just runs like a little bit deeper for the Thunder, but also I think at the top end, it's a little bit more convincing with Shai, J Dub, and Chet. So you know, Indiana's been they found something here clearly, but I don't know if they're beating up on some lower competition in the Eastern Conference, and it'll certainly not come to roost in the NBA Finals. But maybe with their style, with their coaching, they can level the playing field a little bit. But right now, it looks like the Pacers are the team that they. Or the Thunder are the team the Pacers really want to become in the not-so-distant future.
I was just thinking of an exercise that we could do when we have both finals matched up, which might be soon. You have to pick a player from either team for each position, like build your own starting lineup, and how many, like how evenly distributed would it be? Would it be very Florida Panthers heavy? Would it be very Edmonton Oilers heavy? Like, just kind of go through it. Same with your NBA final matchup, too. Like, is your lineup going to be all OKC, or could you pick a couple Pacers in there?
That's interesting. Like, I'm looking at the, I mean, you'd go Shai at point.
Right.
The shooting guard would be, I mean, Dort's the strong forward, I guess. But, like, just go with it. Let's go with the number twos. Like, if you're going the center, maybe you go Miles Turner over Hartenstein. But J-Dub and Chet would be over Nesmith and Pascal Siakam. And then that leaves, I don't know, OKC kind of mixes it up a little bit. But
maybe not as easy with basketball.
No, it probably should be easier, but you know the Thunder get into this position where they've mixed it up. Like they go big and they go small, and they just have more options, more versatility. It feels like the Pacers will have to be exactly what they are, and there's less of a trump card that they can pull or an adjustment that they can make. But I would probably take four starters for OKC and.
What we could do is we could draft it, go back and forth, and see whose team would beat whose team.
Okay.
For hockey and NBA.
We can do that.
Once we have these teams set. Why not?
I like it.
Have a little fun.
Producing on the fly.
Yeah, why not? I was just picturing you like combing through the roster and being like, oh, I got to take that Pacer. Oh, I really want that Thunder. Anyway, we have time for that because we might have a whole week without hockey games. We'll see. Tonight, of course, two clinching scenarios. I mean, guess the Blue Jays could clinch a series too.
Yeah, they could.
The three clinching scenarios on Sportsnet tonight, and we have some best bets for you. I'm very simply going Florida on the puck line tonight. I think they close the series out. I think they can do it with multiple goals. If Carolina is 1-2-3 Cancun, then even easier to hit this bet. Plus 190 to win by a goal. Of course, we saw it last night with...
Two goals.
Yeah, two goals. And they will be able to maybe pull their goalie if they're really panicking to try to get back in the series, Carolina. Anyway, I just like Florida to demolish them tonight.
Yeah, I think there's value on the Panthers. I'll probably won't get as greedy as you. Panthers minus 115 just on the money line.
Good, yeah.
I just think the Panthers are well set up tonight. If you want to ladder it, maybe it gets out of hand. They win 5-1. It was 6-1 with the Leafs in the final game. So maybe it plays out.
It was
just
ugly.
Like that. But my main, it's not a happiness hedge, but like it's pretty clear that the Wolves have one way to beat the Thunder, or at least to stay close to the Thunder, and that is hitting their open threes, more specifically their corner threes. And with Anthony Edwards dealing with so much in terms of the frontline defense from OKC, like I think it just comes down to the depth again for hitting their open jump shots if they're going to stay in this game. So 3+ threes made from Dante DiVincenzo, plus 125, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, plus 210, Naz Reid, plus 300, Jaden McDaniels, plus 350. I feel like if you play all four of these,
one of them to hit,
you're in the money. And I think three probably have to hit for the Thunder or for the Wolves to maybe just even cover this game based on what they figure out from.
Was the spread 8 tonight?
8.5, yeah, dealing with Anthony Edwards. Like if they do the same thing to Ant, it's going to come down to these guys taking shots because Rudy Gobert is not going to be hitting anything. So, yeah, I think they're going to live and die by the corner three tonight. And if you're into happiness hedging like I am, maybe playing three or four of these or winning three or four of these will work out in your favor.
Okay, basketball on Sportsnet 360, baseball on Sportsnet 1, hockey on Sportsnet, and all of that begins after we say goodbye. Just a reminder, tomorrow we're going to carry Bradtree Living's end of season news conference on Sportsnet 590, the Fan tomorrow at 10 a.m. JD Bunkus is going to anchor the coverage there. You can also watch it on Sportsnet.ca. And then Real Kipper and Bourne will have a special Leafs hour tomorrow, Thursday, from 2 to 3. So all of that to come tomorrow. Everybody enjoy your Wednesday. We'll be back on Sportsnet 590 The Fan in 5 minutes. See you then.